So thank you all for coming today. Thank you for coming to our beautiful temple, Sri Radhavallabha, Gaur-Nitai, and Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra. I was thinking about asking a question. It's quite a personal question. I wanted to ask why everybody came today. Any volunteers? Please don't be shy. I'm going to have a few questions this time. So don't worry. Nobody bites here, I hope. So anybody can say?
Yes, I can. It's my birthday today and I just wanted to thank God.
It's your birthday. Yeah. Oh, happy birthday.
What's your... I thank God for everything and that's why I'm here.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's the 3rd of August. You must be a Leo.
Yes, I am.
You're very willful. Yeah? That's very nice. What's your name?
My name is Rohit.
Rohin?
Rohit, I'm HIT.
Ah, yes. Thank you, Rohit. Well, yeah, thanks for coming. Anybody else? Anybody else? Tay, why did you come?
Just for you and...
Oh, thanks. So you laugh about my jokes and clap very loud at the end. That would be great. Yes, Ru. For the congregational chanting and for the dinner afterward. Did anybody just come for the dinner here today? Oh, sorry. Well, I'm sure you're the most honest person here. Yeah, we don't want to miss out on that. Anybody else want to say something? No? Yes. To offer your respects. That's very nice. The whole crew. And the devotees. Yeah, we shouldn't forget the devotees. To offer our respects to the devotees. It's very important. Keeps us safe in our spiritual life. Yeah. Does anybody not know why they came tonight? Anybody came in randomly and doesn't know what they're doing here? That's good. So everybody has a plan. That's great. I was thinking, actually, I get a few different answers. I thought some people might say I'm coming here out of duty. It's a big thing in India, isn't it? The Westerners, they don't really know anything about duty anymore. I didn't really know the word really when I grew up. You didn't have really anything like that in the West. You don't care so much. Still something which is, you know, hold up in India, which is very nice. And I thought also other people come for maybe happiness, to, you know, light to the Lord brings happiness, or maybe to ask for some benedictions. Anyway, we might come for so many reasons, but I was thinking actually there's a very, very important reason to come here. And this very, very important reason actually is connected with the goal of our life. Because where else can we find it than here? I'm doing a lot of outreach work. I'm looking after urban yoga in the city. And so I'm a lot in the city and I see a lot of people wandering around doing so many things. Today I had to buy something, so I needed to enter into Maya. Not with M-A-Y-A, but actually the shop. But there's a lot of Maya out there as well. There was this girl coming to this other girl, and she was telling her about all these things, and I just walked, went it off. So everybody's very, very busy these days, isn't it? You see people constantly doing things, and they're running around, and they're working so hard. How many hours does a person work these days? Does anybody know? What's the average? Well, you know.
Like
Say?
Kids are very busy because they get
education. Oh! So you're very busy getting educated. What are you going to do with your education?
I can spend money.
You can spend money! You have at least two honest people here today. What are you going to spend it on?
I don't
You don't know. So you're earning money, but you don't know what you're going to spend it on. Well, you can give it to Krishna. We know very good ways to spend money. We can buy beautiful flowers on your clothing, a beautiful boga for the offer to the Lord. So when you become rich, let me know, okay? Yeah? Not really? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll give you some years. Yeah, so people are very, very busy doing so many things. Making money, spending money, meeting people, drinking, whatever, many things, good and bad, you know, like, you know, some people might have a good lifestyle, other people have a pretty bad lifestyle, but everybody keeps themselves very busy. But I sometimes wonder if they actually know why. Often you can see people go from so many different places, but do they actually go anywhere? Do they actually reach anywhere? It looks like a lot of people keep themselves busy for the sake of being busy or to get some short thrills, like going shopping and spending all the money they earn for all these hard hours at work and just spend it and get some kind of happiness from that. So people don't really go anywhere these days. There was one Swami coming here like a couple of months ago, I think it was. His name was Bhanu Swami, and he's very, very learned, and he was doing astrology. And he was telling this story about this lady who had claustrophobia. That means she couldn't be in closed rooms. And this lady couldn't figure out where it came from, why she had such problems with it, and it really hampered her life. Because you can imagine not being able to be in a closed room, like there's a lot of closed rooms around and you have to avoid them all, you know, it causes a lot of anxiety. So she went to a personal, put her under hypnosis, and this amazing thing was that she started bubbling up all these past lifetimes she's been through. She was telling him how she actually got her claustrophobia by being very, very sick. She had like a terminal illness hundreds of years ago, and she got locked into this mountain cave, and she could see how they locked the door and how the oxygen disappeared. And basically, Bhanu Swami was making the point that after going into so many different lifetimes, they actually traced back over 3,000 years lifetimes for her. Going into so many different lifetimes, actually, she didn't go anywhere. She was just doing this one lifetime and this, and she did so many things, but she didn't really achieve anything. All what was happening was she was born into a body, and she died in the same body, and she took birth into another body. But nothing really happened in her life until she found out that actually, my goodness, it's not just this lifetime. Actually, there's this whole huge chain, and apparently I'm different from this material body. Apparently there must be something which is independent of the body, which is me, which is going through all these different stages over all these thousands of years, and who knows how many millions of years before. So the point is, we can go here for maybe, you know, offering a bit of puja, or, you know, offering our respects, which is very beautiful. We come here for, you know, meeting saintly people, for meeting devotees. But we have to really keep in mind what we are doing here and why we are coming here for. So, in Christianity, for example, it's a very common thing. They ask for their daily bread. Well, if you have a father or a mother, would you go every day to your father or your mom and ask for bread? Would you do that? Hey, mom, can I have some bread? Or rice? Or chapatis. Let's talk about chapatis or fruits. You wouldn't do that because you know your mom and your dad, they will supply it. Of course they will. They're your parents. Why should they starve you? Who had a lack of chapatis in their childhood? Nobody. That's very good. So it's been taken care of. So praying to the Lord for these kind of things, why should we? Maybe we should think there's something else we can ask him for. Maybe it's a higher purpose of actually coming to the temple Because, you know, if you want just bread or chapatis or puris or rice or whatever it is, we can just go to our boss and ask him for some more money. You know, he might give it to us. Who knows? And also, you know, we get our quota from the Lord. You know, we all have a specific karma we come with in this world, and we get our quota. The Lord will supply us what we deserve. So it's not really, the point is not really to go to the Lord and to ask him for all these benedictions, because first of all, we're going to get them anyway. And secondly, we can just do something about it and, you know, just be pious. And we will automatically generate good karma. So in a sense, we can cheat ourselves. We cheat ourselves in a way that we ask for something very cheap from the Lord. There's a story. I was looking into the Veda Base. Everybody knows the Veda Base? It's a beautiful computer program which contains every single book of Srila Prabhupada, all lectures and so on. It's very wonderful. And there's a story about this old woman. I'm just going to read that quickly. There's that story that one old woman, she was suffering. That is like it's a lecture recording, so the grammar is not... You know, it's just Srila Prabhupada's... how to say, Indian English. She was suffering and she had to collect woods from the forest and sell in the market. So one day, how do you say, she was praying to Krishna, "Oh God, that kindly help me. I am in very poverty stricken." So one day, she was carrying that load of fuel. It fell down. So nobody was there to help her. So she began to cry. "Who will help me?" So she began to pray to God, "Kindly help me." And God came. "What do you want?" "Who are you, sir?" "I am God. Kindly help me to take this burden on my head." "Yes, all right." From God she's asking, "Please help me to get this burden on my head. That's all." So everyone is going on, "Let my family be very happy. My son be married. He may let him pass MA examination. But it is the same thing. Give me the burden on my head." This is a prayer. Muda namam prapatyante muda. Does anybody know what a muda is?
It's someone who's a fruiting worker.
Just that's a kami. The muda is a fool. Sorry. So the life was meant for understanding Krishna and worshipping him, and she was asking, "Give me the burden on my head." Therefore, muda, rascal, fool. This is Srila Prabhupada's way to express things. He's asking something which will never make her happy. Even by merging into the effulgence, Brahman effulgence, it will never make them happy. But they don't know. Therefore, they muda, rascals. So we ask for so many things from God. But ultimately, we will be defeated anyway. We may ask for a for permanent residency. We may ask for a PhD. We may ask for a family to be happy and all these kind of things. But ultimately, it's been taken away anyway. And basically, it's just another burden on our head, because we burden ourselves with thinking about, worrying about so many things. This one, the other, and all these anxieties in our mind. They're all burden on ourselves in the sense that we're constantly worrying about it. Constantly all this... Is anybody here who doesn't have any worries at all? Please raise your hand. No worries. Everything perfect. Couldn't be better. No? I didn't expect that. Because there's always going to be trouble. So if you just pray for just adjusting things, just, you know, to get the firewood back on our head, that doesn't solve the ultimate problems. So we should inquire if there's anything higher we can go to God for and ask Him for. Which is actually, Krishna is very clear about that actually in the Bhagavad Gita. He very clearly explains that, you know, a person comes to the Lord with material desires who's not that intelligent, because, you know, there's going to be problems with anything in connection. And he says that the person who comes to him to serve him and to go back to the Lord, to stop the repetition of birth, death, old age and disease, this person is actually wise. This person is actually very intelligent. He's saying that very many times throughout the Bhagavad Gita. So if we become much more happy, actually it's a paradox. We become so much more happy when we just try to stop being happy. Has anybody thought about that? It's a very incredible experiment you can make. The more you worry about being happy, the more unhappy you become because you worry. Because by nature, worries are not very pleasurable. They're not very pleasuresome. So once you start worrying about all these things, our life becomes much more light and happy. So we don't go to Krishna and worry about all these things and ask him to, you know, to help us out with these little things which are going wrong in our life, but we actually come to him to say we want to stop our worries. And that automatically will make us much more content. So we are already so happy that we have the opportunity to put our, we already have our foot in the door for spiritual happiness. When you compare it with all these people running around in the city, Swanson Street, running from one place to another, job, family, this, that, the other, there's so much anxieties, and we are already here. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Munishyanam sasrishu kachit yatati sidaya yatatam api sidanam kachin mam viti tatvata. He says, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So this group of people who are sitting here, how many million people are in Melbourne? Does anybody know? How many? 4 million people? How many people do we have in here? You see, it's only very few people who are that fortunate. Everybody else is just worrying about so many things in their life. But we are already here. We know that there's Krishna. We know there's ultimate relief from all this stuff which is going through our head, which is going on in our life. We know there's a solace. We have a place where we have shelter. We know that there might be, according, it's up to the different levels of faith, that there's some understanding that actually Krishna is going to look after us. And that actually we don't have to worry so much about the externals and just concentrate on developing our faith and our devotion to him. So since we already found our way here, please don't let us waste this opportunity. You know, we are already so fortunate. How unfortunate would it be not to take full advantage of the situation? So please let us think about how we can develop our good fortune and understand the real purpose of this temple, understand the real nature of the deity, try to understand the scriptures we've been given, the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and all these wonderful devotees, you know, in the line that's like this, the Parampara, the picture of Srila Prabhupada, spiritual master and so forth. We are so fortunate to be in touch with these teachings of these greatly elevated personalities who are just so incredibly pure and are so concerned about our welfare. So don't let us waste this opportunity to attain the highest goal in life, which is not a permanent residency, which is not a PhD or having all our children married to very wealthy husbands or wives or whatever, but actually is to develop devotion to the Lord and attain to the spiritual and come to the spiritual world. You are all of the where there's no worries. No worries made. Spiritual world is called Vaikuntha, means without anxiety. There's no anxiety. Because there's no birth, there's no death, there's no disease, you don't have to worry about any kind of residency or paying your rent or all these kind of things. There's no worries. Everything is taken care of. It's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Sarvadharma Parikya Gyan Mami Kam Sharanam Vraja Hamtram Sarva Pavipyo Moksha Ichami Machachaha. Machachaha means do not worry. So the Australians, they just took it from the Bhagavad Gita. Now we know it all. Anyway, so that's Krishna's slogan. And, yeah. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he's going to look after us. He promised it many times. He says, that surrender unto me and I will look after everything else. You do not worry about it. And I just wanted to read one very beautiful verse in that connection, which kind of summarizes that very nicely. It's the 9th chapter, the most confidential knowledge, and it's the 29th verse. It says, Samoham Savabhutishu Nami Dvesho Stinapriya Yibhajanti Chumambhaktya Mayete Tishu Chapyaham. The translation is, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. Prabhupada, one may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is a special friend, then why does he take a special interest in the devotee who are always engaged in his transcendental service? But this is not a discrimination, it is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity in whatever form is his son, and so he provides everyone with a general supply of the necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on a rock or land or water. But while his devotees seek a specific attention, such devotees are mentioned here, they are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna. The very phrase Krishna consciousness suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendentalists situated in him. The Lord says here distinctly, Mayite, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains it was Yeyata Mam Prapatyanti Tangstataiva Bajamyaham. Whoever surrenders unto me, proportionally I take care of him. This transcendental reciprocation exists because both the Lord and the devotee are conscious. When a diamond is set in the golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified and at the same time the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter. And when a living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. Living entities in a pure state are called devotees. The Supreme Lord becomes the devotee of his devotees. Does anybody know the Sanskrit term for that? Bhakta Vatsala. Krishna. For example, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is on the chariot, and he actually serves Arjuna, who's guiding the chariot. So this feature is called Bhakta Vatsala, because Krishna, by the devotion of his devotees, Krishna is so conquered that he becomes their servant. You know, everybody in this world wants to be the master, but actually the Lord wants to be a servant. But this is not the exploitative mentality we have now in relationships, but this is actually the mentality which develops out of pure love. If you love somebody, you want to serve them. So it is, if a reciprocal relationship is not present between the devotee and the Lord, then there is no personal philosophy. In the impersonal philosophy, there is no reciprocation between the Supreme and the living entity. But in the personalist philosophy, there is. The example is often given that the Lord is like a desire tree, and whatever one wants from his desire tree, the Lord supplies. But here the explanation is more complete. The Lord is here stated to be partial to the devotees. This is a manifestation of the Lord's special mercy to the devotees. The Lord's reciprocation should not be considered to be under the law of karma. It belongs to the transcendental situation in which the Lord and his devotees function. Devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world. It is a part of the spiritual world where eternity, bliss, and knowledge predominate. So we can see what a waste it would be to come to the Lord to ask for material benediction. The example is given that the Lord is like a cloud. It rains on everybody. We don't have to worry about these things. We just do what the Lord wants us to do, and everything will be supplied. And in this verse it says that a person becomes very, very dear to the Lord if he enters a relationship. So how do we usually enter a relationship? Does anybody have an idea?
In anger.
Sorry?
In anger.
In anger. We enter a relationship in anger. Yeah, but doesn't necessarily have to be like that. I personally think I have some friends and the relationship is not based on anger.
Yeah, I think he thought you said anger. Not enter.
Oh, enter. No, I was saying enter. Like, how does a relationship develop? How do we start a relationship?
Attraction.
Helping. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what I was looking for. We enter relationships through service. We serve each other. For example, why does a child love the parents, especially the mom, why does a child love them so much? Because they do anything for them. Like, the bond is so close. If you like we have some very beautiful families here, some very beautiful children, and you can see that the children, they just love the parents so much. It's just incredible. And the parents are self-sacrificing. They're sacrificing everything for the children. So the bond we have is not just to talking and sharing the good times and going on a party, but actually we can see if we have a real friend, if they stick to us and help us in whatever situation we are. You know, if we are lost somewhere and they pick us up 3 o'clock in the morning, then we know, wow, that's a real friend. So relationships are based on service. The same with the Lord. If we serve the Lord, whatever, then how much will we endear ourselves? He says, I'm partial to no one, Krishna says. I'm partial to no one. Everybody is equal to me. But a person who renders service unto me, he is my friend. He's in me and I'm with him. So this is such a close connection. And this develops through our service. So if you start serving the Lord in whatever capacity we have, it doesn't mean that you have to shave up and, you know, become a monk or, you know, give up everything or go to the forest and, you know, forget about your children and your it doesn't work like that. It has nothing to do with that, but in whatever capacity we are living, or whatever capacity we can do, we do our best. We have children, we raise them in Krishna consciousness. We bring them to the temple, we tell them about Krishna, we read the books to them. If we have work, we can spend some money on the temple, we can maybe preach a bit to our colleagues, we can maybe prepare some prasadam or some blessed food and distribute that to them. There are so many different ways how we can serve the Lord. So, but through the service and through our attitude, because Krishna doesn't look at how much we give, because everybody can give to different capacities, but he looks at how much we hold back. So if we really start giving to Krishna, we will endear ourselves so much, and he will start reciprocating in the most incredible way we cannot even imagine. Because the Lord is, you know, he owns everything. He is the reservoir of all pleasure. That's what Krishna means. He's the reservoir of all beauty, pleasure, of everything. So if he starts reciprocating, my goodness, that's just beyond our ability, you know, we can't even conceive that. Because he's unlimited. Often we are already so impressed if one of our friends starts reciprocating with us, but all these ones are limited, but the Lord is unlimited. So he can reciprocate in an unlimited way with us. And just by this little bit of service, Krishna says, "Patrampushpam phalam toyam yomi bhakti prachati tataham bhakti paritram ashnami prayatatmanaha." If one offers me with love and devotion a fruit, flower, leaf, or water, I will accept it. So anything we can do for the Lord, he will very happily accept it, and he will start reciprocating with us. And I guess that's just what we want, isn't it? So there's many, many festivals coming up. We have Jamastami, we have Balaram's Appearance Day, we have Radhastami, we have Julan Yatra, we have Shri Prabhupada's Appearance Day, and he's leaving to New York, and there's so many things coming up. So I would request all of you, if you want to help in any way you can, please please maybe ask the member services, or if you want to do any kind of service, you can also ask me. You can donate to the temples, you can come and help, you just can come to the festivals. There's so many different ways you can engage yourself, so please don't hesitate and start developing your relationship with Krishna. So that's all I wanted to say. Is there any comments or questions? Anybody like to say anything? Everybody shy or bored or hungry? Or you usually have a question, probably. Do you want to ask something? Oh, thanks. Thank you. Okay, then I'm going to tell you a very quick story. This is short. There's, because prasadam is not yet being served. There's this, you know, I was talking about asking the Lord for things. And there's this very, very beautiful pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the more advanced study to the Bhagavad Gita. The Srimad Bhagavatam, many of you will know, was spoken by Sri Vyasadeva, and who compiled, you know, who divided the four Vedas. And after dividing the Vedas, he felt this great dissatisfaction in his heart. And the spiritual master Narada Muni came, and he asked Narada Muni, "I've done such a great work for humanity. I've divided the Vedas. I've written them all down so that, you know, people can take shelter in them in the future. But still, I'm so dissatisfied. There's this big gap in my heart." So Narada Muni said, "It is because you haven't glorified the Lord, his activities, and the activities of his devotees. Therefore, you feel so dissatisfied." So Srila Vyasadeva sat down and he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, which specifically deals with these subject matters, with the Lord, his activities, and his devotees and their activities. So it's very, very beautiful. And there's this pastime of Dhruv Maharaj. And Dhruv Maharaj is the grandson of Lord Brahma, the creator, or the secondary creator of the universe. And Dhruv Maharaj, in the age of 5, was very, very badly mistreated by his stepmother. He wanted to climb on his father's lap, who was the king, and the stepmother was very, very nasty because she was very envious, and she was basically telling him, "You can't sit on the father's lap because you didn't take birth from me." So he was very insulted, and he went to his mom, and his mom was telling him, "I can't do anything about it. You go in the forest and you meditate on the Supreme Lord, and he will help you." So very determined, 5 years, Dhruv went into the forest, and it's described how incredibly austerities he was doing. And basically what he wanted is, he wanted a kingdom greater than his grandfather, Lord Brahma, who is the creator of the universe. So he wanted to be more powerful than that. So he became so powerful by his austerities that he choked up the whole universe, because he was withdrawing all the universal airs within his body. He became so powerful. So the demigods were very afraid. They couldn't breathe properly because all the prana was withdrawn into Dhruv's body. And by his austerities, he became so heavy. He accumulated all the weight of the world, pretty much. And because he was just standing on one foot, but the weight of his foot, he was pressing down the earth. So the demigods were afraid that the earth was going to drop into the universal ocean, in the Garbhodaka ocean. So very, very much afraid, they approached Lord Vishnu. And so Narayan came to Dhruv, and he basically said, "What do you want? Don't make trouble." No, he was very friendly, because he was very inclined to Dhruv, because such a young boy and so determined. And Dhruv Maharaj, who had this great ambition, he also had a real warrior, real Kshatriya spirit. He wanted to become so powerful and really kind of pay it back, you know, to those who have mistreated him. And when he saw the Lord, he just couldn't believe that he had all these desires. And he was, the Lord touched his head because he was just a little boy, and the Lord touched his head, and so he was able to compile all these beautiful prayers and verses. And he was glorifying the Supreme Lord. And what he was saying is, he was saying, I was praying for some broken pieces of glass, but now I see you, the real jewel, the real gem of my life, and I don't desire anything else anymore. So the Lord fulfilled his desires anyway. But Ruth went home, and he had such resentment in his heart because he couldn't immediately understand that actually all he wanted was the Supreme Lord, who can fulfill all desires and who gives all happiness. So yeah, that's a very wonderful passage in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Nobody, any comments? Then we're gonna finish, and we can queue in for the beautiful dinner we're gonna have. And very soon, probably our temple band, they're coming back probably? Yeah? Our temple band is going to start some more kirtan here. So please don't miss out. It's also a way to serve the Lord, hearing and chanting. This is the first process of service to the Supreme Lord. So please stay here for tonight and enjoy your evening. Thank you all for coming. Hare Krishna.